Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
What's good, internet? It's Austin Walker. I'm coming to you live again, actually live, on December 12th, 2016, from the Brick House in Vice HQ, Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
Joining me, Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
Patrick Klepek.
You stumbled on my last name.
Got your last name.
I was going to say, come on.
It's Monday. I spent the whole weekend being woken up by a cat.
Yeah.
I have a roommate who has a cat. I like the cat a lot. Her name is Gracie. She's like 15 or 16.
Oh, she's
tiny.
Old Gracie.
Old Gracie.
Yeah.
She's got a beard.
Oh.
She's fantastic. I love her. She's a mustache. She's great.
These are all the things you say before you're about to tear this cat apart.
Here's the thing.
This cat's going to get a little bit dragged here.
This cat doesn't respect boundaries.
Uh-huh.
All I'm saying, I don't need a lot of sleep. I do. I need a lot of sleep.
Yeah, you do these days.
I've come to terms with not getting a lot of sleep lately. But every hour and a half to 2 hours since Friday, Gracie has woken me up.
Crazy.
If I'm not already awake. Like 3:27 a.m. Austin, you got to get up. She's clawing at my
is
door.
Is she like pawing at your face?
No. So
she doing the biscuits? No.
She's not doing the biscuits. I close my door because I don't want her to like literally jump on me to wake me up.
Yeah, yeah.
Though I did try a door open for a while. She so what she does is she'll claw at the door a little while. She'll meow. And if that doesn't work, she'll start reaching under the door for things. To like grab on anything nearby.
Yeah. Yeah, that
so I have like
paw.
A coat over a chair or something. It's just like slam. My entire coat is on the floor. It's getting dragged through. I have like a big pea coat. She's like trying to drag it through the bottom
Gracie.
Of my. She like doesn't fuck around. Or if I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna put like a trash bag near the door so I take it out in the morning or something. She's like, no, guess what? Grab.
I know.
Pulling this through, gonna cut a hole in the bottom of your trash bag.
Gracie.
She's mean. So I tried opening the door also. And that didn't work because then she's just like, yeah, I'm going to come in and just like hop on everything.
Yeah.
Or, like she'll do the thing where she's like, all right, I'm here. I'm like, all right, pet. Like, all right, cool. Calm down. I'll go to bed on the on my lap while I sleep or whatever. She's like, no, what I'm going to do is laps. And she's like, Austin, fucking put your hand out. I'm like, why? Put your hand out. I'm like, all right, she's like, I'm going to do laps and you're going to pet me. Like, I could pet you. I could just pet you. She's like, no, you leave your hand out and I'm going to just do laps.
That sounds like my cats, although we love them so much and we spoil just the living crap out of them.
Literally.
So they can come in. I mean, literally.
Literally, there's crap all over
crap. Well, that's the dog's crap.
Okay.
But yeah. Yeah, the cats are always like allowed in the bed and like they enjoy cuddling with us, but also attacking our feet.
Right.
So when they're hungry, there's a lot of foot attacks and a lot of sniffing up our noses. That's a thing that our cats
they
do.
Sniff your
noses. They're also really young. Yeah, they like put their noses right up. Like, up to our nose. It's cats are weird, man. Cats are just weird animals.
Do
I put things up my
do
nose?
Do you put things up your nose?
No. I knew where you were going with this.
I mean, in the past, maybe.
I mean, not currently.
Yeah, not currently.
Like, there's nothing up there.
Okay.
They want to make sure. They're like, oh, there might be cat food in your nose. I don't know.
Prove there isn't.
Prove there isn't.
We
gotta
check. Yeah.
That's how
exactly.
cats are. That's how
believe
cats are.
Or verify.
That's right.
What,
on that note.
What about you, Patrick?
I don't know. I don't got any cat stories.
You have a dog. It's a tiny dog.
I got a tiny dog who we're about to enter the most miserable part of the year, which is called winter, because she does not like to go outside. Her feet are very sensitive, which means you're supposed to put boots on their feet.
Little silicone booties.
Yeah. But she doesn't like things on her feet because her feet are sensitive, so you can't put boots on the feet. which means she just doesn't really go outside. You have to pick up the dog and you take her to, you hope and you pray that another dog has gone to the bathroom recently. Mm-hmm. And so I walk up and down my block. This is specifically after like weekends like I've just had where we got like almost a foot of snow. None of it's melted and stuff like that. So it's like, you know, if the sidewalks are clear, I can take her out and it's just fine. But right now when it's all snow everywhere, I'm looking for yellow snow. Yeah. And then thanking the gods that there is yellow snow because I can set her down. She will sniff it and then hopefully judge that it's a spot she can go on. But the moments that drive me nuts are when she hasn't been out for hours and clearly she has to go to the bathroom. And I put her down next to one of those yellow spots and she judges. She deems it not worthy. Not worthy of her urine. And thus then she'll sit there and she'll pad away around. She'll judge this urine not worthy of her and then go, "Also, my feet are cold. Can we go back inside?" And then I scream. Sometimes I scream.
Patrick, we missed the end of that story because I unplugged our headphones.
I left.
That's what just happened. That's
fine.
Thing. I heard.
I was laughing at that.
A dog stuff happened.
Yeah, dog
That's
stuff
what we
happened.
Understand.
I got
yeah.
Snow.
Yeah.
So, pets. Welcome to pets.
Welcome
to Pets Radio.
Wait, Pets Radio. Yes.
So how's everything else going otherwise? It's Monday morning. It is a cold Monday morning, I think, in both of where you are at, where we are at. It's rainy here. It's snowy there. This is, to me, like normally the time of the year where I'm like, all right. I'm not going to go outside. I'm going to say no to social obligations whenever I can because it is sad outside and sad inside. And this is a good excuse to play video games.
It becomes the thing where it's like, please, friends, come to me. And then sometimes I'll do the thing where I go to them. I don't want to go anywhere but a person's house.
Right.
Where we can play a game and be warm and toasty together and have nice, happy times in a house with a couch. Because I don't want to sit at a bar right now. It's too sad. It's too cold and too sad.
Okay, but alternatively, what if you could play games in a bar?
Okay, that would help.
That would be good.
That would help a lot, actually. That would make the bar's case.
Do you have any, like, board game bars near you?
Yes. It's a place called Booby Trap, and we play Truth or Dare Jenga there.
Okay.
It's like a boob-themed bar. It's amazing. Right in Bushwick. If you're ever around, Booby Trap.
Is this where the debate was between titty and titty?
No, actually. That wasn't where it was, but it should have been. Because this is a bar that has, like, breasts on the ceilings. There's a lot of, like, boob-themed things. There are cartoon pinup girls that you can color in with crayons. It's lovely. It's a great
fun for the whole family.
It really is. I brought my sister and her boyfriend once, and they were like, oh, this is what you get up to. Everything makes sense now, Danielle.
This is awesome.
Thank
this
you.
This is what New York is.
This is what New York is.
Perfect.
Boobs. It's lovely. Booby Trap.
So are you playing anything besides boob coloring books?
Lots of boob coloring books. Uh-huh. No, mostly Pokemon. I had a weekend at home, so I kind of, like, seeing my family, there was some deaths in the family, so I kind of, you know, I did the healing Pokemon thing.
Condolences.
Yes, thank you. It's all right.
Like, I guess that is totally the sort of game I would want to be playing at a, like, not at a funeral,
right.
But in the periphery of a funeral.
I showed my young cousins the Pokemon.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. At the dinner afterwards, I was like, check out my Pokemon. And they were all excited about it. It was cool. That was good.
That's nice.
You know, 11-year-olds still like Pokemon.
So that's the thing. Like, did either of you run into that thing of like, oh, you're the cousin or the aunt or the aunt, whatever, that's like, oh, it's the video game one.
Yes.
So all the 12-year-olds, like, want to talk to you about video
They're
games.
Very excited to talk about it. They all want my job, and they all want to come visit here. And I'm like, anytime you're in Brooklyn, you can come to the office. I'll show you all the cool stuff we have. And so now they're, like, bugging their parents. They're like,
you can
get out of Brooklyn?
Can see how we don't play video games all day, even though that's what I think my job is.
I was like, I'll be typing all day, and that'll be fun.
The job is so – I was explaining that to someone recently, to someone who was a younger member of the family – who had been told that, like, oh, he plays video games all day, and then, like, breaking it to him that, like, no, my job is, like, way more, it's still a great job, but, like, it's not
that. I love
that.
It, but
it's not
it's a
that.
Job.
Yeah.
It's still a job.
That's, like, a 5-10%
yeah.
of our jobs is playing the things, and then otherwise it's doing all the other stuff.
It might be less than 5%.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's the ideal. Like, it's playing it at night.
Right.
You know?
It's like in your off time.
Of course, yeah.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. That's the 5-10%.
That's supposed to be your home time, Danielle.
I know.
That's when you're supposed to go to Booby Bar.
That's when I'm supposed to go to Booby Trap.
Booby Trap. Sorry, not Booby Bar.
I mean, I'm sure Booby Bar is another place.
It just happens.
It is a Booby Bar.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. It's a booby bar. It's the booby trap.
Correct. Right. You got it right.
Exactly.
Come to Bushwick. We have a lot of fun.
Great. How about you, Patrick? What did you get up to this weekend?
Man, I'd heard about this chapter 13 in Final Fantasy 15.
Oh, like
it's
okay.
It's this albatross that I have heard about for like the weeks leading up to it. And so, like, you know, on Saturday night, my wife went to bed early. I had some time. I'm like, I'm in the final sprint of Final Fantasy 15. And, you know, I was talking about it on Friday. But, like, I want to try and put this game to bed. And so I hit chapter 13 and I'm like, how bad could it be? Like, come on. Like, maybe this has just become a meme at this point. Like, oh, they're patching it. Like, and, you know, how that chapter 13 is. It is both literally and figuratively a nightmare. It wasn't clear to me I was ever going to escape. Like, it wouldn't have surprised me if, like, the reason people are freaking out about Chapter 13 is because it never ends and there's no ending to the game. And you just continue to play Chapter 13 for, like, the rest of your life and you're stuck there. It's bad.
Is Chapter 13 Frog Fractions 2?
Man, you know, at this point, anything might be. I would have preferred it to be Frog Fractions 2 than Chapter 13 of Final Fantasy 15. is what I'm saying. And what it is it's indicative of like this larger. So chapter 13 of Final Fantasy 15, I don't want to. It's a stealth section that takes away all of your weapons, and then you have to play the game fundamentally different than how you've played it before. Which in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's a little strange when it comes at the very end of the game, at the moment when you're supposed to be applying like how you've theoretically been playing the game before to a higher level. Even all that aside, it's Final Fantasy 15 has all these different moments that are clearly inspired by other games. Like there are Uncharted sequences all the time in Final Fantasy 15. There are this is clearly a stealth horror section. Like in a certain way, I admire the fact that this game imbues itself with a lot of like very clear influences. Games they looked at and went, why can't Final Fantasy be that? In 2016, like, why does Final Fantasy have to be in this box? Why don't we try this?
We can
other
do whatever
stuff?
We want.
Yeah, it just sort of feels like they took the ideas and were like, "Oh no, we got to put content in this game." And so, like, this section that should have either been a small amount of the game as opposed to like a 2-hour epic, like, which is like the uniqueness of 13 is novel for about 15 minutes and then becomes just a real problem because it's just really pretty poorly designed. But I've never played a game that I feel so conflicted about, which is also why I find it so interesting and also why I wanted to play it in the first place. Like everything I sort of criticize or complain about with 15 is also part of the reason I like it because it's just so strange and they went for it and going for it does not mean it's a good idea. So, like the term they went for it does not necessarily connotate that, like, they accomplished it.
Right, but they sure did try. Yeah. And I was joking about the Frog Fractions, like connection there or the comparison. But actually, when I think about Frog Fractions or when I think about other comedy games of that ilk, there is a sort of, like, oh, you're not going to be doing the same thing this whole time. We're going to be iterating on the thing that you do. There will be different sub games that you play. Like, you'll start by being a frog on a lily pad, like, catching things. And then by the end, there will be, like, a weird economic simulation. Yeah. Right? And so, like, I do like it when big budget games experiment in that way. Because other big budget forms of entertainment and art do experiment like that, right? Like, you know, we often compare games to movies and stuff, but also in terms of their length, something like Final Fantasy 15 is more comparable to like a TV show. And like TV shows will sometimes have weird one-off horror episodes.
Yeah,
or
called,
like
bottle episodes.
Exactly. And so like that's totally a viable thing on paper. It's just a matter of like, did you execute?
Yeah. Did you do it well?
It doesn't sound like that. In this one case, it necessarily did. Does it do it? Like, again, I'm still way early. I did put some more time into it this weekend, but I'm still way, 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 way earlier than you. Do you find that the other excursions off into other genre works?
No, not now. Not at all.
I mean, not even, okay.
Largely because it just feels like their first attempt at it, right? Which is not to say it actually is. I'm sure this went through all sorts of iteration and, you know, it ends up where it ends up and then a game has to be shipped. And it is clear, for all sorts of reasons that Final Fantasy 15 was kind of, hey, this has to ship. There are very clear signs in the way that game was delayed that, this came kind of as close to the metal, pedal to the metal as possible to just kind of get it out the door. But like the Uncharted sequences, are sort of like these, they're just not very well done. But like you look at it and see, oh, I see what you were trying to do. It's just not particularly well done. So it's like I admire the fact that they're mixing things up, taking influences from non-Japanese games and just from sort of like broader genre sort of like plucking. And that makes me excited. It's just like its current iterations just aren't particularly well done. So it's almost hard to tell, is the team just they're just getting started figuring out like how to do this stuff, or like is it that the team is not capable? Like it's hard to know. I mean, I play 15, and part of what makes me excited about it is that for as sort of like haphazard and like as much of a grab bag as it is, as sort of in terms of genre and tone, like it makes me excited to have this team look at what worked and what didn't work. I think you can look at the arc of just the demos they released, which I didn't play, but from all accounts, as you, Austin, I know you played the other demos, or at least touched on them, and like the combat being like so kind of objectively awful in early iterations. You
know, there are people who really liked the Disguise demo combat. I never was able to wrap my head around it in a way that was meaningful or fun. Okay. Like, this is all from memory. I'm probably getting some stuff wrong here, but there was weapon switching still in the same way. Like, you were still Noctis with the different, like, ethereal weapons that you could call forth. But you did special moves based on like when you switched between the weapons mid combo, which is definitely the sort of thing that I imagined could be really cool if you spend dozens of hours getting used to that combat and like internalize that system. Again, maybe I'm misremembering how that worked. It's been a couple of years, but it never clicked for me during the length of that demo. And then the other thing I mentioned to you last week was like, the other thing with playing, I wish I hadn't played that demo at all, because there have been a couple of things that are really cool that I saw on that demo that now don't have that same impact with me here. And it's weird, because like I've always been a person who doesn't get bothered by spoilers. Like, I'm not spoiler phobic in that sense. I respect the need. I respect the desire for people not to be spoiled. I think there's actually a pretty good class argument against being like very open with spoilers publicly. I also am a critic, which means I like being able to spoil things while I talk about them, like, because it helps me.
You're coming from all sides. That's right.
But in the last like year, I've become like a little bit more interested in going into stuff with less information about it. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. I'm ambivalent.
when you're coming from all sides, sometimes you get a little ambivalent.
It turns out. So I read an article like a year ago about someone who saw The Force Awakens without having ever seen any trailer for it, without having ever seen anything about it at all. And like, that was a deeply emotional like experience for that person. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I like that movie. I wrote about that movie. I enjoyed it. I had thoughts about it. Thoughts that I was able to start percolating on months before I even saw it. So like, that experience of like having this intellectual relationship with it and slowly working over its questions about like legacy and parenthood and all that stuff was something I could do because I engaged with the pre-production materials and the publicity materials and all of that. And I like that. But I also like, what if I did just have a little bit of wonder on something? Cameron Kunzelman, who is one of our regular contributors, once wrote a piece years ago about trying to get wonder back in games and like the feeling of wonder. And I respect that and have started thinking about it a little bit more, whether or not that's something I want to look for. You know?
Yeah. It's hard to do if you're in this job, though.
It is.
I mean, that's true. And it's sort of like, you need to at least be aware. It doesn't mean you're going to preview events necessarily or playing, you know, early builds, demos of things. But it you kind of need to sort of know what's going on. Yeah. It's hard to not be at least somewhat aware of what's coming out, who's doing what, et cetera, et cetera.
And sometimes that information helps me enjoy something more.
Yeah.
So I think about like when Monaco came out, I'd followed Monaco very closely in its production. And along the way had just kind of learned how the systems worked. And so when it came out, I was able to like do some of the harder levels a little bit earlier than my friends were, or like help guide them through that stuff because I understood some weird mid-game mechanics in a way that they didn't, which helped me understand that game. And that's a really interesting thing. Or like, I think about, we've talked about Dark Souls in this way before, that like, oh, leaving the game is the way you get good at the game. Like going onto forums, digging into that stuff with people. And I don't even mind spoiling myself on some light things in games like that ahead of time, so that I know like from the jump, all right, faith is busted in this version. Like intelligence builds are busted in this version. Like I'm not going to build that sort of character, which you only get if you
go out before you ever touch the thing.
Yeah, like, I mean, know? In Dark Souls 3, like, I got sort of screwed because I decided to invest in a certain side of magic. I guess must have been, I think it was faith. And, like, I essentially wasted, like, 30 points because like, I was like, cool, I'm going to do this this faith build that is with dex weapons, and it's going to be great. And instead, I just, like, completely wasted, like, a whole arc of the game. I had a much weaker character because I didn't have that information. So that's, like, where that's not a spoiler. That's just, like, a game that, you know, some games are intentionally obtuse and are meant to be sort of peeled back with communities, and then other things aren't. Like, you know, I mean, if I wasn't, you know, a critic and someone that follows the series, like, I wouldn't be watching anything about Resident Evil 7. Like, I don't want, like, part of that game and its air of mystery is the appeal to me, is, like, going, like, and especially for horror, like, horror, I think, especially is extremely sensitive to spoilers, where, like, knowing about, like, what's ahead is actually detracts from the experience of sort of, like, engaging with it emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so for, like, RE7, it's like, I know enough about that, enough that I can talk about it and speak to it, like, as a larger industry game and whatever it represents for the franchise. But, like, I haven't watched, like, the last two or three trailers because I don't, like, I get it. Like, I don't need to know, like, whether there's a shotgun in the game in order to, to speak to it.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. Well, I hope that our changing desires around this stuff helps inform how we want to cover stuff before release too, right? Like, we definitely have the opportunity to talk to developers sometimes and say, like, so is there a shotgun in it? And, like, I want us to be able to. And the reason we did that for so long, I think, is that for us, that might not be what's interesting, but for a wide audience, that can be what's interesting, right? I mean, this is the, I remember being 16 and going to IGN.com or GameSpot to see the, like, every wrestler entrance that they would have as an exclusive. Like, yeah, I want to see it. Like, I want to see Bret Hart enter. Hit that music. Like, he has on those sunglasses. Whoa!
Yeah, that's right.
And so, like, that, I think there is an audience for that stuff. But I think as the kind of media side of games, you know, the games industry gets older, I've seen more and more previews and interviews and stuff that instead of saying, like, how many shotguns are there, it's, like, a little bit more into, like,
how does that shotgun feel?
Right. At the very least,
what was your inspiration
for that shotgun?
For this shotgun.
Was it a real shotgun or a video game shotgun?
Did you shoot some zombies in the face?
Yeah.
Like, did you do that for real? Like, you gotta make sure.
Also, I wanna shout out Titanfall shotgun real quick.
Yeah.
Which works like the way a shotgun does, which is to say, there's range on it. The thing that happens in video game shotguns all the time is that they're, like, really long punches.
Yeah.
Like, not that long, but, like, you could basically jump out and hit somebody. But no, in a real shotgun actually has some range. And, like, Titanfall actually has some range. That's a small, tiny thing. I'm not saying we only need realistic shotguns, but I like it when they try that.
I understand
it when they, like, break from the dogma of video game shotgun religion.
Yeah. The language of the shotgun.
Exactly.
Yes, the language of the video game shotgun.
So did either of you play anything else this weekend?
Doom.
Yeah, exactly. Doom. It's Doom. It's like, and I get it. It's a good ass shotgun. I get why you want to, like, recreate Doom shotgun, but there are other shotguns. You can try other things.
There are other shotguns. Title of the episode. I like it.
There are other
your
shotguns.
Your shotgun was in another castle. I don't know.
Yeah, but I wish we'd said that at the end of, like, a dope metaphor about life, and instead.
I feel like it is a dope metaphor about life, about punching guys in the face with bullets.
Right. There are other ways. There are other shotguns.
There's other ways to do that.
There's always a shotgun. Got it. Anything else going on this week? Anyone excited for anything before we dip into this old question?
Are there new games this week? What else? Like, Dead Rising came out. I did want to go back and play that.
Yes.
I heard it's, like, dumb fun.
I'm excited to play that. I'm also excited. I just got Steep. I haven't started yet, but yeah, I think that's out yesterday.
Oh, it came out earlier than that. Everyone's just forgotten about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like snowboarding games.
Snowboarding's cool.
So I want to give it a shot.
Do you know why they didn't really push that game at all?
I don't know. I mean, I've played, like, preview builds at events and such, and it seemed like some fun snowboarding and wingsuiting.
And we're gonna play
paragliding. Yeah. Yes. It's wingsuiting.
Yeah.
Skiing, snowboarding, and what's the fourth?
There's a parachute.
Oh, there's also
parachute. I've seen people with parachutes.
Parachuting as well.
It might be paragliding.
Yeah. Something like that. You're on the mountains. I like mountains. Sounds like fun. I'll give it a shot tonight.
Yeah, that sounds good. Patrick, anything else?
No, I'm looking forward to play Last Girl. I'm actually, like, deeply curious to hear what Steep is and whether you enjoy it, Danielle, because that game, like, the trailer seemed rad, and, you know, I, like a lot of other people, really, you know, wish a series like SSX still existed. Yes.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And so it's like anytime they announce a new snowboarding game, my question is always like, what does this mean in relation to SSX? Like, yeah, you know, because right. Really, like, I would love nothing. I wish EA would make another one of those. I understand why they won't, and they probably won't. So I'm curious to see if that game would scratch that itch at all. So
yeah, it's weird because I remember an era of every other game, like snowboarding games were almost like their own little genre. Yeah. It was like
even Nintendo made one. 1080.
There was 1080. There was Snowboard Kids. Like the N64 had a whole bunch of snowboarding
cool borders.
Games. Mm-hmm. Cool Borders. Cool Borders 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, that's there were a lot of Cool Borders games.
Yeah, there are plenty of those.
Amped? Is that?
Amped was a snowboarding game.
That's not just an energy drink?
No, it was also a snowboarding game, for sure. Maybe they were sponsored by
I don't know.
That.
Matt Snowman's snowboarding. Sean White.
No, Sean White.
It was Sean White.
It was a Ubisoft game. I think
it was.
No, Sean White skateboarding or snowboarding?
No, he's a snowboarder. I know that.
But he did release a skateboarding game.
He was the Carrot Top dude, yeah.
Right, but he did release the skateboarding game where you grind on things and neon Tron lights happen and it paints the world.
Wow.
And you can paint things. It's called Sean White's skateboarding.
That's actually amazing.
Because he wanted to get into skateboarding.
That actually sounds really rad.
It's 100% true.
That sounds like a fun game.
I'm sorry. For Sean White, because I hear that
Tony
game was
Hawk's
bad.
Sean White.
But Sean White snowboarding also existed.
Good.
You're right.
Patrick's
game.
See?
It was released. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Sure.
See?
You're like, okay, I guess this is real.
Uh huh.
Why would they make that game?
I don't know. Because they have the license. They have the IP, the exclusive Sean White IP.
Sean was just hanging out and they're like, well, all right. What do you want to do, Sean?
Skateboard and Tron and painting.
Okay, sure.
Those are cool player experience
those
goals,
are, those
all right?
Those are things you could want to do.
Those sound like fun.
Thank you for using the official terminology.
You know what? Player experience goals.
Peg.
Yeah, sometimes you got to peg it right. You know what I'm saying? Okay. It's not what I meant, but it's what I said. It's
definitely a Peggy 18
really
podcast.
I'm really glad I'm Peggy 18 all the way, baby.
This comes in from T on the subject of IP. I only recently got in. We're going into the question bucket. If there's any question about it.
We're right in the bucket
I'm getting out of this and going into the question bucket. Skimming from the top. It's Monday. It means you're getting fresh questions.
Fresh from the top.
If you want to email us, if you want your questions
don't
read.
Don't point at me.
If you.
Stop it.
We have webcams now for people listening on the podcast. I'm pointing at Patrick.
Okay, there's a point.
If you want to send your question in, where can people send them?
Questions at
gaming at vice.com.
Questions at idleweekend.net.
That's your other podcast. Gaming at vice.com with the subject question.
Question. Make sure you get that subject in there. Otherwise, we'll think it's a pitch and we'll put it in a different
box. I have a podcast questions label. I have a pitches label.
See,
I have
nice.
All sorts of labels.
That's very nice.
People are against labels these days, but I can't.
They're helpful in email.
In email.
Okay? Not good for people.
Not good for people.
Good for email.
Labels. This comes in from T, who says, I only recently got into the Assassin's Creed games after ignoring the series and everything that had to do with it for years. But after playing Black Flag, I can confidently say this type of game is totally my jam, and I regret not getting into this series sooner. Hold your editorializing about whether or not Black Flag is representative of that overall.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was a bad first one to play.
Ooh,
in that it's a really
point.
Good one.
Yeah.
Now, my question is, are there any other types of games or IPs that you wish you'd gotten into sooner, for instance, because you've been missing out on the hype or for practical reasons such as the presence of a player base in online games? P.S. Great job on the site. Thanks, T.
Thanks. Thanks, T. I definitely have one of these.
Yeah?
I never played a Zelda game until Ocarina of Time, and I feel like I missed the boat a little bit on Link to the Past, and I've sort of gone back and tried to play that, and I've, you know, I've played the original, like, I'm playing it a little bit on the NES Classic.
Sure.
And I like them, and I appreciate them, but I feel like I have been a little bit spoiled by sort of some of the niceties of later Zelda design, and I consider myself a pretty big Zelda fan as well. Like, I, you know, I ride or die for Majora's Mask kind of thing, you know?
Yep. Welcome to Waypoint.
Welcome to Waypoint. And also Wind Waker. I love them both kind of equally. Those are both great. But yeah, I feel like a little bit, like I've had a hard time kind of getting into the older ones because of that.
Sure. How about you, Patrick?
The Persona games, specifically Persona 4. And so the reason I started playing Dark Souls was largely because I felt left out. It was like, there was a certain threshold of people that I respected and liked games that I enjoyed that was so into that series that I was like, okay, I've got to give it another shot. Like, it just doesn't make sense that all these other people where our tastes line up, like, this is the one game where it doesn't make sense. And then I got through that barrier. And I have nothing against, I'm playing through a JRPG right now. Like, I love JRPGs, but Persona 4 is just, like, just kind of I'd never really played the Persona games before, so I didn't really see a reason why I needed to jump in at 4, except that everyone started flipping out for Persona 4 and has, you know, since that game came out, and I feel that anxiousness as Persona 5 is coming forward. Like, I know the games are not connected, and I know that, like, I don't need to have played 4 to understand 5, like, necessarily. But, like, I feel like I've missed out on, like, a game that people put in, like, their top 10 list of, like, games of all time.
All time, yeah.
It's my girlfriend's favorite game.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of tough because, like, I know I'm gonna love that game. I just don't know where I find the time to play that
80-hour-long RPG. Yeah, that's a long.
That's fair.
I have, like, the opposite thing, which is, like, there's lots of things that I used to be up on and fell off of. Right, like, when I was younger, I was very much a, like, oh no, I play good games. Like, I like the sort of, like, elitist, shitty, like, only plebes care about genre. Like, Past Austin was the fucking worst. But that meant, but on the other hand, like, that did end up pushing me into a place where, like, yeah, I'll play a great sports game. Yeah, I'll play a great racing game. Yeah, I'll play a great JRPG or a Western RPG or a strategy game. Like, I played as much of everything I could, which is how I eventually broke the weird elitism, was just, like, eventually enough of it broke down that I just, oh no, it's cool to like a bunch of things. Yeah. Like, that's cool. But in the process, I ended up zeroing in on the sorts of things I really like. And, like, I haven't played a football game in ages. I've played a football game. Like, I've played a couple of games of Madden or something. Madden, you know, 2012 or something. I haven't played a Madden since the early 2010s. Yeah. I haven't played a FIFA game in ages. I've played one of the Pro Evolution Soccers in the last 3 or 4 years, a little bit. But, like, I used to love those games, like, to death. And, the thing that reminded me of that was I actually did a review for GameSpot like a year and a half ago, a little bit more than that, for Project Cars, which is a racing game that's like a super simulation heavy racing game that I think is like a brilliant racing game because it was just about driving cars and like it was just about the joy of driving cars and tuning cars and like figuring out the best racing line and there weren't like intense progression mechanics. I played it soon after coming off of The Crew, which I did not like very much, but thought had promise. And thought one of the big things that The Crew had missed was that, like, oh, driving is fun. Like, that's a fundamental thing that car games should be built on, is that driving itself is fun. Like, going fast in a car is a fun thing to be doing. And so when Project Cars got that right, it reminded me, like, oh, man, I'd left this entire genre behind for a decade or something. Every now and then something draws me back into some old genre that I'd left behind.
Yeah.
So that's my example of that for sure. Here's one. This comes in from Akshan. This is very important to me and I need to know Waypoint's stance on the original release of Doom 3 that did not have flashlight technology. That's not true exactly. There was flashlight technology, right? Yeah. You just couldn't use flashlight and a weapon at the same
time. That's what it was.
Yeah, you had to hit a button to switch between them.
I've seen this called the no duct tape. There was no duct tape.
It was a duct tape mod, which like someone immediately put into the game that allows you to strap a flashlight. And then I believe the re-release, the BFG edition that came years and years later, just added that in at core, or maid Software patched it later, but I know at some point it became sort of like irrelevant to the game as a design decision. I don't know. I can't, like,
There's more of this question.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Even more. Sorry. It goes deeper. Okay.
Jeez.
I could talk about Doom 3 for 15 minutes. So I was fine there.
I bet. Yeah. How do you feel about games that use flashlight mechanics, from batteries to Metro's flashlight hand pump technology? It's one way to build tension, but when does it cross the line to becoming cheap? For me, it's like, as always, my answer is going to be like, it depends on the implementation. Like,
yes.
If you want to tell me that there's a game that has flashlight batteries, like, cool, but the battery spread in terms of collectibles better be correctly done so that I don't end up for a long period of time with no batteries. Yeah. I should always be in that period of feeling like, oh, do I have enough? Or it should be, you know, it should be set up so that, like, sometimes I have a lot and sometimes I have a little, and that's effective.
And it's so easy to spawn something in, yeah, you know, like, to see, like, how long it's been. Anyway, I'm just saying. That's not
You're
hard
saying
to
that
fix.
It should be fixable.
It should be fixable.
Okay.
Yes.
So what do you think, Patrick? You can talk about Doom 3 now.
I remember that was like a huge thing when Doom 3 came out, this whole flashlight design, because like, id Software, from what I remember, defended it fiercely, saying this was a risk reward mechanic,
right,
which I think is a totally like understandable way to defend that as a design, except that it's like, it doesn't line up with what like a super space marine would be able to do, which is like to figure out how, right, to do both those, right? Like, so I don't have an issue with the fact that you're swapping between the two. They just needed a better narrative reason to like more. Sure. Like, I think people would have bought it better if it just didn't seem so boneheaded for like this guy who was fighting thousands of aliens can't just like combine these two so he can do his job better. That's why I think a game like Outlast, in which you are shrouded in darkness. When you're not holding up your camera, and then when you, right, hold your camera, you get a night vision mode, and that battery drains. And so there's a even though it's happening faster than obviously how batteries drain in real life, you can sort of, as my dog runs around, you can understand that, like, how they heighten that mechanic and speed up the battery, right, depletion, as a way of, like, heightening the tension in the game. And I can buy that. Like, I don't have, yeah, any problem with, like, a battery depleting super fast,
right,
because it still, it makes sense. Like, oh, you use something, it depletes, and then you've got to go recharge it or find new batteries. Like, that works, fine for me. So I think it's a fine line. I'm usually, like, it's too bad because I love the idea of what Doom 3 does, creating that risk reward. I just think it was implemented poorly for people to buy it.
How about you?
I agree with that.
Flashlight?
Outlast was the thing I was going to, yeah, also say. That's a good example. I guess Alien Isolation also does something similar with it, although it's risk reward in a different sense. The alien will sense you faster if you're kind of using your flashlight in the tunnels.
Yeah.
And that's the only time you're really using it, because typically that's the only sort of real dark area, and it's like, flash it on just to see what's in front of you and then flash it right off, because otherwise it'll be easier to see. So that's another one where it's like, it kind of makes some narrative sense in the way they do it. It's not battery. It's not tied into, right, batteries necessarily, but it's that general idea with
the flash. Yeah. The motion detector is a good example in that,
exactly,
game where,
yeah,
you know, when you whip it out, it, I feel like I just did a Danielle-ism right
you
there.
You did. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Nice. It's cool. Good. We all do it sometimes.
When you use the motion detector, you know, it makes sound, which is going to attract the, yeah, creature. And so, yes, you're going to know where it is, but then you might, you know, sort of, like, and that's an example of, like, one of those mechanics that makes sense narratively. Like, you can buy the risk-reward.
Totally.
And it's fun to engage with. So I think, like, you know, yeah, that, it's just thinking through those design decisions. And also, Doom 3 is a really great game. I hate the fact that people don't like Doom 3. Doom 3 is great.
It happens, Patrick.
It's
people
pretty
don't
good.
Like the things. Speaking of, I'll tell you about a game called Dragon's Dogma, which doesn't have flashlights, but does have, one, like, the scariest Dark Knights. I think Final Fantasy XV, like, wants to do that a little bit. Not in that it makes the night dark, but in that, like, literally harder monsters come out at night.
Right.
Demons come out. Daemons come out
the
at
daemons.
Night. But in Dragon's Dogma, it's really important to be prepared for nighttime. I wrote about this earlier this year, but, like, you need to have enough oil for your lantern. You need to make sure that you don't get, like, soaked, because if you do, the lantern goes out, and then you have to, like, put it away and then take it back out. And then if you really want to, like, prepare, certain classes have abilities that literally will, like, put light into the air. So when I play as a magic archer, I almost always, when I know I'm going on a long quest, like, bring the thing that lets me put a flare into the air to, like, light things. And that's cool because it's a different sort of kind of risk-reward, or it's sort of a trade-off of, like, that could have been a really cool combat ability I brought with me. But instead, I brought this thing that lets me see a little bit better, which is useful, but is not as good maybe as being able to lock on 12 things and shoot a magic arrow that splits and hits all 12 things. You know,
it's which, pretty cool ability.
And I like that as a thing of just like, okay, yeah, you can have light, but here there's some sort of trade off for having it besides just being spotted. It's another version of that, which I like. I like it when people are like, okay, well, what's another thing we can do with this mechanic? What's another way we could, another type of choice that you can make?
Well, and Dragon's Dogma specifically, makes this a frustrating trade off that I don't think makes the game better, but makes the nighttime stuff more effective is the lack of fast travel.
Yes.
Which is to say you can fast travel in that game, but it requires very expensive items that you don't get access to very often, which means you beat the game and then don't use any of your fast travel items.
So they fixed that?
In the DLC, in the expansion, in the DLC, right?
In Bitter Black Isles, Dark Arisen, which is like the kind of game of the year version that has the expansion in it. You just get a thing called like the Eternal Fairy Stone, and it can go to any of the spots for free.
Which is how it should have worked, but maybe there's a middle ground between the two of those, in which you have to, you know, maybe if you fast travel, you lose half your experience or, I don't know. I'm trying to think of some way that they could sort of cut down on players wanting to do it every single time, because part of what, like, otherwise it's very easy to avoid nighttime. And so, but part of the fun of the nighttime in Dragon's Dogma was like, well, if I go fight some more monsters, if I go do one more quest, like, I'll get a little more stuff, but then I might have to trek back to, you know, the big central city, in the dark, in which, you know, things can go really poorly. And when you introduce fast travel, you negate a lot of the tension there. So, you know, it's one of those, like, I wanted fast travel or something that was more effective than running from one side of the map to the other in the way that I played that game. But I also recognize how much the lack of fast travel actually helped certain aspects of the game that I did enjoy.
Awesome. Yeah, totally. That's pretty much reflects my experience for sure. I want to play more Dragon's Dogma all the time.
I want to play it. We should do a stream where you introduce
maybe,
me
maybe
to this
Wednesday.
Game.
Maybe Wednesday
That's
we should we should play some Dragon's
They need to bring
Dogma.
Over that MMO.
Idea.
They fucking do, and then we can do it. We can have a guild. We can have a Dragon's Dogma guild. A Waypoint Dragon's Dogma guild. I'll do another real quick one, and then we'll wrap it up today. This one's a pretty selfish one on my part.
Good.
This comes in from Jesse. My group of friends and I want to get into pen and paper RPGs, and I've offered to be the GM because I've played a few sessions of D&D in high school and have always been that nerd who owns RPG books but has never really used them. I was that nerd for a long time also. I still am in some ways. Like, I definitely buy RPG books the way I think some people might buy movies, which is like, I'm never going to have time to watch this, but I want to have it.
Yeah.
Or I want to support it. Like, man, this person, Ben Robbins, who made this game I love, made a new game. I'm definitely going to support it, even if I never find an excuse to run it. The players decided they wanted to be cyberpunk themed, which I'm totally on board with, and I've been kicking around some ideas for a campaign. I know you're a big cyberpunk fan
Hell
as well.
Yes.
However, I've run into a bit of a roadblock in that I can't seem to choose a game system I like. The two most popular seem to be Cyberpunk 2020, which is the game that The Witcher, the CD Projekt Red Cyberpunk game is based off of.
Gotcha.
It's on that universe. Cyberpunk 2020 and Shadowrun. Both seem fine, but also a bit too mechanic heavy for my group of beginners. Absolutely. For example, the hacking bolt sounds like it would be a terrible experience for anyone else at the table who wasn't part of the hacking. Absolutely true. That is like the go-to problem with cyberpunk tabletop games is like, if you have a hacker, chances are you have to develop an entire side thing for them to deal with while the rest of the group is like not hacking stuff and is like shooting stuff. And like, that is not a great use of your prep resources. Like, if you imagine designing a D&D world, like, or think about even a video game that deals with this stuff, where it's like, oh, right, here's a, you have a fighter and a mage and a healer or whatever. You build the dungeon for them. But imagine, like, in the dungeon, suddenly there's a whole other wing of the dungeon that
just
only
one person
can engage with. And it's like a real tricky thing. It's always been. Austin, as someone who's very knowledgeable in both the cyberpunk and tabletop RPG worlds, I'm willing to bet you know what other systems I should check out. Also, any other tips for a first-time GM who's going to be using Roll20 would be greatly appreciated. So Roll20 is an online thing that you can use. It's what I use for Friends at the Table. It's what I use for any sort of like long-distance tabletop role-playing game thing. It's not endorsement necessarily. I think it's pretty good. I think it could be better in some key instances. The two games I would advise people look into who want to do tabletop cyberpunk things. One is called Tech Noir. It's by Jeremy Keller, and it's really cool because it is a cyberpunk game, but it is a cyberpunk game that is in the vein of like it wants to replicate the structure of noir films.
Oh, man.
So it's all about trading punishment back and forth.
you kind of have dice that you roll dice to see if you can do things, right? Obviously. But then the players start with these certain dice called push dice, which is where they push themselves a little bit further. And it's a game also based around adjectives, where, like, instead of doing damage, you put different degrees of adjectives on people. So, like, if you were trying to seduce someone, the basic level of it could be, like, you could give them the interested adjective. They're interested in you. A little bit higher, you can make it a little stickier. It could, like, last for more than a fleeting moment, and you could give them the adjective, like, enamored or something. And then you give them a permanent one that's, like, obsessed or in love or something like that. And it's really cool because once you do that, the GM gets those dice and then can hurt you back. And the example that the developer of it, the designer, uses is that, like, if you think about something like Chinatown, where, like, how does Jake, the lead character in Chinatown, get things solved? It's not because he detects things. He's not, like, a great detective. No. He busts into places and, like, gets his nose broken or slashed. And this is a game where to progress the storyline, you have to get your nose slashed. You have to get beat up. You have to fall in love. You have to get injured. And that's how you end up pushing the story forward. And so it's like a procedural web system of storytelling. The GM doesn't design a mystery. They design a world. And then based on how things roll and how things come out, different connections are formed. It's really fascinating. The other one that I'll suggest is The Sprawl, which is like Dungeon World, what we played, but cyberpunk.
Oh, man.
Really simple dice mechanic. Really cool. You can hear both of those things at friendsatthetable.net. My second season of that show, which is my like actual play podcast, was a cyberpunk and mech themed show, and a little bit of noir and some anime. And if you listen to the second season of that, a show called Counterweight, you can hear me. We start with tech noir and then we move on to The Sprawl, when I realized that tech noir is super cool, but not meant for podcast play. Definitely meant for, like, you have some friends over play, and things can, you can take a little bit more time coming up with cool adjectives than, like, needing to be on the ball and quick and, and playful.
Improv it quickly.
And then just general thing, ask questions to your players. I kind of said this on the AMA that I did last week, but, like, the best thing a GM can do is say, hey, how do you know this thing? Or what is the answer to this thing? If you watch the 72-hour stream Dungeon World game we did, Adam was constantly asking us questions. Like, what is the one weakness of skeletons? Like, how did this, you know, where did you find this thing? And then, like, use the answer to develop off of that. It gets your players involved, and it kind of guides them. It lets them be part of the collaborative process of world building. And that's really good. So those are the two games I would suggest. Tech Noir by Jeremy Keller. And The Sprawl by Hamish. I always don't know how to pronounce
Hamish,
the name.
Probably.
Hamish. Fuck, I want to say Black, but that's a different person. I forget Hamish's last name. Hi, Hamish.
Thanks, The Sprawl. Hamish.
Find it. It's great.
I'm gonna become such a tabletop nerd.
You should. I should.
The
just
more
start
you talk about this, the more I'm like, oh, like, I want to do this.
As someone who loves game design, you've to understand that there has been a decade, 15 years of really smart, independent, like, alternative game design in the tabletop space where people are pushing that genre really into really cool places. It's something I want to definitely hit in 2017. Like, I've big plans for trying to shine lights into that space for people who don't know about it. I think, though, that that's going to do it for us this week. Where can people find y'all on the internet? Danielle.
Oh, Danielle R.I. on Twitter. And I think I'm Danielle Riendo Writer on Facebook.
Patrick.
You find me at Patrick Klubik on Twitter and at Pete Klubik on Facebook.
I am at Austin_Walker on Twitter, at Austin Walker Games on Facebook. You can also find Waypoint at Waypoint on Twitter and at Waypoint Vice on Facebook. All of our articles get posted there. Obviously, you can also go to waypoint.vice.com, waypoint.zone, bazinga.zone, digitalpyramids.com. You already know what it is. Visit the site, read some stuff. We have some great stuff in the hopper, as it were, coming up this week. Some very exciting things. You can also write in and send us questions by where can they do that, Danielle?
They can go to gaming@vice.com.
Uh-huh.
Subject line, questions.
There it is. That's what you got to do. Thanks, as always, to Tim Barnes, who is producing and engineering our podcast right now. And thanks, as always, to Bowen, who does the song Miss You, who's our theme song, as the intro and outro off of his EP, Pale Machine. You can find out more info on him at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Yeah. I think that's going to do it for this week. Or not this week. I wish it was this week.
Oh, no. It's Austin. It's Monday.
Oh, no. Week is over.
It's
yay.
Terrible. The week is over.
Austin said the week is over.
I said it's over. That means everybody gets to go home. It's almost holiday time. We'll get a bit of a break soon. But until then, we're going to have to keep hustling. Yeah. You stay hustling out there, too. You can get through this week. We can all do it. We can do it together.
Yeah.
Deep breath. Face tomorrow. Peace.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.